Our next presentation is by Abby Pierce, and Abby is a vaccine preventable epidemiologist with the immunization program in North Dakota. And so please welcome Abby.
Morning. How's everyone doing? Everyone have coffee this morning? Like Lisa introduced me, I am the vaccine preventable epi, and as one of my roles as the vaccine preventable epi, I am the perineal hepatitis B coordinator. Some of you may recognize a few of my slides from the National Hepatitis Conference, but I promise it's completely separate. North Dakota demographics, however, haven't changed. So the overview of my presentation today is, first of all, I'm going to give you just a little bit of a background about North Dakota, some of our demographics and our birthing hospitals and some issues and challenges we have with that. Then I'm going to just explain our perinatal hepatitis B program. And the main point for me being here today is just to go through, historically our program has been non-existent or very passive, and we had very few women reporting. So when I started, I kind of took the program over, and I'm really trying to work in different ways to get more of those women reported and more of their infants followed in our program. So I just kind of want to go through our program, talk a little bit about birth dose rates. I know many of you have differences between your chart audits and your NIS rates, so I was going to go into that a little bit. Methods that we as a state, North Dakota, have used to try to improve reporting of those pregnant women, and then where we need to go from here. So again, North Dakota is a very rural state, as many of you probably know. We are not completely underwater. We are bailing slowly, so hopefully it'll still be there when I get back. But in 2008, our population was just a little over 600,000, and that is our entire population for the state. Our population is mainly made up 91% Caucasian. Our next largest group would be American Indian. We have a number of Indian reservations in our state. And then the next are Black, Asian, and then other. We are a very rural state, and everyone is spread far apart, so it obviously requires a lot of challenges with trying to get our populations in and treated correctly. In 2007, North Dakota only had 18 active birthing centers. That doesn't include every center that delivered a hospital or delivered a baby, but those were considered active birthing centers. There were a few facilities, because it is so rural, that a woman would walk in delivering and they didn't have time to transfer them to an active birthing center. According to the definition of a major birthing center, which is more than 100 births per year, we only have 11 that would be considered to deliver more than 100 infants in 1 year. So as you can tell, many patients have to travel long distances to get to an active birthing center. Recently, our expected births to service antigen positive mothers were revised. It was previously 21 births per year, and we're now down to 17. I'm happy to report that last year we had 14 mothers reported, so we're getting very close to our estimate. And I believe this year we're already up to 8 reported mothers. So we're hoping to meet or exceed the 17. We have a very low hepatitis B prevalence. A lot of that is because we don't have a large Asian Pacific Islander population. And we are trying to increase annual reporting. Until I started, it was an average about 3 to 5 births reported per year. So going more into our program, into the real nuts and bolts, I am the only coordinator in the state. Like I said before, I'm the vaccine preventable epidemiologist, so unfortunately the perinatal program doesn't get a whole lot of my time. And we do have a very small prevalence, so unfortunately that's why I spend so little time in this program. And it varies. It depends on what the women and the infants in the program are doing. We try to actively follow a lot of our families, so the time differences are pretty different every week. And the other individuals who do help me is we do have field epidemiologists in our 8 major regions of the state. And once a hepatitis B case is assigned to them, then they verify pregnancy status and then it's transferred to me. We do offer universal birth dose, regardless of insurance status. We are not a universal vaccine state. However, we do offer universal hepatitis B vaccine. HBIG is also offered through the state at no charge. Usually 4 to 6 weeks before an infant is to be born, I send a letter to the hospital, and they can request HBIG if they would like it. We are fortunate in the fact that all of our major birthing centers are enrolled to receive state-supplied vaccine. That was just accomplished in the last year, and that was kind of one of our big stripes, was just to get all of those birthing centers signed up to receive free vaccine. We do also offer vaccine and serology testing to any household and sexual contacts of our perinatal investigations as well. Just going over, just showing the difference between the birth dose coverage and our chart audit results. Before the National Hepatitis Conference, I had a higher birth dose coverage, and I'll explain why that's a little bit different now. This is just breaking it up between within 1 day, within 2 days, and within 3 days. And even though our NIS results are a little bit lower, they are fairly similar. So some of our data from our 2007 chart audits about our birth dose rating did change a little bit. We do have 31% of our infants included in the chart audit were receiving birth dose within 1 day, 69% within 2 days, and 83% within 3 days. Previously, I had said that our birth dose rate was closer to 90%, but that was because I was including anyone who received the birth dose before they were discharged from the hospital. So when you break it down by day, it's a little bit different. That difference lies in 6.5% was given before discharge, but was more than 3 days after birth. So if that mother and baby were there for longer than 3 days, they were receiving it after that 72 hours. 4% of our infants' actual time of vaccine wasn't given or it wasn't useful information. So the time the vaccine was administered may have been given before the child was born. So that was just a data entry error. We do have about a 5% parental refusal. Generally, in North Dakota, we only see about 1% to 2% of philosophical, moral, and medical exemptions, so this is a little bit higher. Something else I would like to look at a later time is to find out if that 5% of infants who refuse the birth dose, if they later got vaccines, they were just refusing the birth dose. And then 1% of our population in the chart audits were medically unstable or deceased at the time of birth. And so now on to kind of the meat of the presentation. These are just methods that we've tried to use to improve reporting of our pregnant hepatitis B surface antigen positive women. So this is just kind of an overview of what I'm be going into. First of all, birthing center incentives. I'm trying to facilitate face-to-face meetings with real stakeholders in all of our major birthing centers. Also a mailing titled The Protocol for the Prevention of Perinatal Hepatitis B for Healthcare Providers. Really getting in the hospitals and trying to change those standing orders, working with infection control, using our electronic birth certificate information, and then finally offering surface antigen testing at state labs. So the first method would be the birthing center incentives, and what this is really to get those hospitals to buy in to get state-supplied vaccine, because we often find if they offer state-supplied vaccine, those babies are much more likely to get vaccine. Like I stated before, we do offer universal birth dose, so they don't necessarily need to screen for insurance status. They can offer it regardless and use that state-supplied vaccine, which is a huge cost savings for them right now. And I know a lot of hospitals and medical centers are really trying to trim costs wherever they can. So this is a huge cost savings for them. They don't have to purchase the vaccine. It's free for them. Another incentive that we're trying to use is we offer a state-supplied TDAP program, and this is purchased with our 317 funds. This program, is for all new mothers and new fathers of infants and any significant caregiver in our state. Because we do have a higher American Indian population, we have a lot of non-traditional households, a lot of extended family living in those houses, and being significant caregivers to those infants. So this program is open to any significant caregiver. And we're finding that a lot of our birthing hospitals are really buying into that program because they want to vaccinate those caregivers before they leave the hospital with their infants. So that's a huge incentive to our birthing centers. One issue that we do have with that we're working with is most of our birthing centers will vaccinate our new mothers, but the issue lies in they're hesitant in vaccinating new fathers, and that's simply because the father is not a patient of the OBGYN, and so that physician doesn't want to take the liability to vaccinate them. But we're working on that. And one way that we've worked on that as well is pharmacies can administer adult vaccines in North Dakota. Mainly now they're administering shingles and influenza shots, but we're working on doing Tdaps. So when the father is there bringing the infant home, they can go to the pharmacy and still get their vaccine before leaving. Another method that we've that we've used is actual face-to-face meetings. I'm trying to go to all the major birthing centers because we find it's a lot easier to ignore us when they don't know us. But once you start to know the program and know the people that you're reporting to, the relationship gets stronger and the communication gets a lot better. And we get a lot more, I'm just giving you a heads up, you know, kind of things like that. They'll actually call us and say, just so you know, we're waiting for this, but we think she's positive. So what we've been doing is doing organized meetings with critical nursery staff and trying to get it to be a little bit broader than you would normally expect, not just the people, not just the physician and the nurses who are going to deal with the mother and baby, but the people who are going to make the financial decisions and the head of the departments. We like to always have a physician champion at that meeting who more facilitates it than we do, because they can kind of call out the different divisions and find out what they're doing and how they can improve. And it seems to go a lot better when we actually have a physician leading that. We actually review the protocol for the prevention that we send out. We go through it, ask any, leave it open for comments if they have anything they would like to see changed or any questions. We also do a question and answer session regarding hepatitis B prevention and any concerns with the program. And then we address each unit at a time to find out what they're doing, if they have questions, if they have concerns, and if they have current protocols. So that would be going through discharge nurses as well as the NICU and any other division that would be included. The other mailing, it's a mailing that I spoke about, it's a prevention protocol, and I did bring a few copies if anyone's interested in looking at it, or if you want to take it back to you and use it, I can certainly send it to you electronically as well. And what I really tried to do is make it as short and sweet as possible, because I know that physicians are busy, and we have a very low hepatitis B prevalence, so a lot of those physicians don't deal with it a lot, and they need simply the nuts and bolts of how to deal with this in the first 12 hours of that baby's birth. So we found the easiest way to do it is they're actually individualized tabs, and no section is longer than 2 or 3 pages. And we found that that was really helpful, that you can, you know, go directly to your tab, read the couple bullets you need, and then come back later and read the entire thing. It also includes copies of CDC sample standing orders, our reporting forms for both the OBGYN and the hospital reporting form. And then something else we found really handy is just a flow chart. So it says, is mother HBsAg positive, yes, no, or unknown, and they just kind of funnel the bubbles to go through the correct treatment. When I first mailed this out, I wasn't sure if anyone was going to read it, I wasn't sure how it was going to go over, but I actually received quite a few letters, emails, and calls directly from physicians asking questions. And also I've had a few providers call, and they refer to the red binder I sent out, so I thought that was very positive. The next thing we're trying to do is change people's standing orders. We do have a copy of all of our standing orders from our major birthing centers in North Dakota, and just really working with them to get them updated and to include CDC guidelines. We always offer examples of CDC standing orders. We've also provided assistance and reviewed old standing orders and really worked with them to get those updated. Something that we do need to work on and will work on from here is changing standing orders to include copies of original lab results and babies' charts. I guess we didn't realize that that was a problem until we were doing our chart audits and realized that really no one was doing that. They were all transcribed results. Another partnership that we're really trying to work on to get those reporting women increased is working with infection control. And they've really been a monumental point in both our chart audits and improved reporting. We're working with a lot of the large medical units with their infection control, and they're actually changing some of their programs, so it's actually infection control that's reporting these women, not the physicians necessarily. We're also working with them to get to report to other jurisdictions, such as other states. The majority of our refugee population is in Fargo, North Dakota, which shares a border with Minnesota. So they generally transfer back and forth between North Dakota and Minnesota. We now have a system set up with our large medical units in Fargo to report to either North Dakota or Minnesota. And also Indian Health Services is now being reported to that way. And like I said, they've been a huge aid in restructuring the reporting protocols. Another key point that North Dakota has, and I know a lot of other states are working to or already have, is reporting on an electronic birth certificate. We are fortunate enough to have hepatitis B surface antigen reported on our birth certificate, as well as birth dose NH big. So that's a huge key point in how we find a lot of these women. Once a week, a secure file is sent from our vital records. to me directly, and that reports any perineal transmissible conditions. So that would include HIV, chlamydia, syphilis, and hepatitis B. So that's how we find out about a lot of our babies being born. We do find out about a few new cases this way, but generally we're going to find out when our babies are born. And this would be the majority of how we find out about these births. We do have quite a few data entry errors. People are listing hepatitis B infections. Actually, she was given a hepatitis B vaccine, but it's a good education point to be able to follow up on those. And then the last method is going to be the hepatitis B surface antigen testing. And this is going to be, of course, more directly to the mother, not necessarily reporting of her. But we find that we get a lot better relationship with the mother if we're able to offer services to her. So we do surface antigen testing. We'll also do further testing if they want to look at surface antibody. And we'll also offer a vaccine for free to any household or sexual contact that she designates. And that's through our public health laboratory in Bismarck. We really find that she's more likely, either through the physician or through us, to report more contacts and get to more people protected if that's at no charge and if she actually has a good relationship with us. So areas that we need to work on, like I said before, reporting our births is mainly through electronic birth certificate. And even though that works, that's supposed to be used as a safety net. It's not at all 100%, especially with the data entry errors. Delivering physicians very rarely report. We have a few physicians that work a lot with these populations, and they're getting better, and their nurses are getting better, but a lot of times we see them in the paper, or they're on the electronic birth certificate, or infection control will notify us. So that's something that we would really like to work on. And then again, changing the standing orders to include the mother's original lab results in the baby's chart. We do need more education. We are a very rural state, and like I said, Fargo has the majority of these populations, and so if we do have a hepatitis B positive case in a pregnant woman outside of Fargo or in a very rural neighborhood, a lot of the physicians don't know how to deal with it, and she may not be correctly treated or correctly cared for. So we need to do a lot more education in those more rural areas where they think that it may not pertain to them. And hopefully, the mailings are going to help, but I think the face-to-face visits are going to help. And then the other thing is we need to increase our birth dose rates. Like I said before, we do have a fairly high birth dose rate, but in our state, when we have such low exemptions, there's no reason that it shouldn't be well above where we are. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Abby. That was an excellent presentation. Folks, we have plenty of time for questions for Tanya or Abby, so please step up to the microphone. Sure, go ahead.
Good morning, great presentation. Thank you, ladies. I'm Alexandra McFall from Pennsylvania, and Abby, this is for you. It's great about the TDAP being offered to the postpartum moms, which we do also, but we're also looking to give it to the fathers and the household members and caregivers. And we're trying to figure out, you're correct, they are not the patient. Right. How does the father, how does the caregivers get it? Do they get a voucher? Do they go down to the pharmacy? Who's responsible?
Well, that's a good question. It's something that we're working on. Right now, I think most of the birthing hospitals, the state-supplied vaccine is to any of our enrolled providers. And so I think the main way that they're getting those fathers and other caregivers vaccinated is actually sending them to a local health department. And then they can receive the state-supplied vaccine there because that new parent program is available to any of our enrolled providers. And so that's what they're doing right now. We don't have it at pharmacies yet, but that's where we're moving to, is because we're really getting a lot of hesitancy from those OBGYNs saying they're not my patient, I'm not giving them medical care, which we understand. And so I think the key point, we'll get the pharmacies being able to administer so mom and baby can be in the room and the father can just walk to the pharmacy, get vaccinated, and then take them home. But that's something that we're working on.
And as far as the caregivers or like grandparents, et cetera, they can go downstairs or go to local health department?
Yep, the program in North Dakota is set up for any significant caregiver. And so that's really up to the provider, because we know with our population we couldn't do mothers and fathers because we're going to leave those infants exposed. And so we do any significant caregiver, whether that's a cousin, aunt, grandmother, or daycare provider.
Are they given a voucher, so to speak, to go to the health department?
No, it's a state-supplied program, and so all I need to go is
just walk in.
Walk into the health unit and say I'm a significant caregiver of an infant, and they would qualify. They would still have to pay the vaccine administration fee, but that's it.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, ladies. Again, a very good presentation for early in the morning. Tanya and Abby, Tanya, you don't need to be nervous. You're doing good. And Lisa, again, thank you. This is Gene Robert Jeffworth from Arizona. I'd like to know exactly, how do you get the buy-in from the physician and the hospital administrator in terms of having the face-to-face and kind of developing the network and communication to enhance your program?
Yeah, certain facilities have been really on board with it and want to schedule the meetings as soon as possible, and other ones, you know, they're all busy, so some of them have been smaller and we've scheduled a few in-services. We haven't gotten to the point where we could do continuing education, but that's something that we've thought about, is giving them credit for coming, because they get credit for our AFIX visits and things like that. And again, I can't say enough about our infection control staff in North Dakota. They've really been the ones that we've been working through. I know AmeriCare Health Systems, which is located out of Fargo, is a large health system for North Dakota and Minnesota, and they just had a champion physician who really felt that this was important, and unfortunately, a lot of the hospitals we've done in-services after there have been mistakes. And so we don't want to go in and think that we're there because there was a mistake, but people are generally a little bit more on board and a little bit more excited about it if they know that their facility has done something that puts someone at risk. And so a lot of those birthing centers have gotten more people if it's following, you know, a child not receiving HBIG or not receiving HBIG within the first, you know, day of life, things like that.
Now, when you have the result of your chart review, do you take the occasion to have them together for a presentation or a workshop?
I'm glad you brought that up because I forgot to mention that. I actually met with the majority of birthing hospitals before we started, just to go over our protocols and explain what we were going to be doing with the chart audits. And I have all of the intentions to go back. I know a lot of hospitals, whether it's for internal purposes to improve or for competition reasons, they want to know how they did and they want to know where they rank and what percentages and what, you know, we saw that they could do better. So I absolutely intend on going back. I just haven't done that yet. We're actually not even completed with our chart audit. So I want to complete that so we have complete statewide results before I do that.
Thank you.
Hi, Carol Finley from Illinois. This question is actually for both of you. In doing your chart audits, what proportion of the audits or the systems that you reviewed at each of your facilities that you reviewed, what proportion of them had electronic medical records, and what sort of a difficulty or challenge did that propose versus a paper document?
The majority of our hospitals are electronic. There are pros and cons for both, I would have to say. Paper, obviously, the initial setup is a lot more work because you have to actually pair the paper mother's chart with the baby's chart, and that has its own issues. And digging through it, but electronic in some ways slowed us down as well because we had computer issues and networks were slow and scanning isn't always perfect and things like that. So there were issues with both, but most of our hospitals are electronic.
In terms of answering that question, I can't answer that question for you. It differs from project site to project site. So I just oversee and manage the project site at CDC. So my apologies. But I can get with you if you would like, you know, to contact those that I work with. I know.
Dorothy Dawson, I'm a public health nurse here in Texas, and I work with the physicians in the community, and I have a question that I need answered, and I'm not too sure how this fills in. But basically, you have your hepatitis B surface antigen mother that's negative, and we have now a generation and a half of children that have received their vaccine. Those children now are becoming mothers in that. If they are negative, is there any advocacy for getting that hepatitis B series to the adult who's never been vaccinated, who is negative at this time? And how should we respond to those deliverable doctors?
So you're talking about moms who are HBsAg negative,
right.
But maybe were never vaccinated with Hep B. If she has any of the risk factors,